Steve Nash? Wait, Steve Nash? Whoa, Steve Nash! Those were some of the reactions to the hiring of Brooklyn's newest head coach. I'm your host, Michael Scotto, and joining me now on the Hoopside Podcast to dive into the Steve Nash hiring is my good friend Anthony Puccio of Nets Daily and the host of the Brooklyn Way Podcast.
What was your first reaction when Steve Nash got hired? Because I had to do a double take when the press release was sent. I had to enlarge the font, make sure that I wasn't missing something. Because for me, it was a shock. And for a lot of people around the league, it seemed that way. What was your impression when you saw that Steve Nash was going to be the 23rd coach for the Brooklyn Nets in their history?
Scott, I'm right behind you. I was absolutely floored. You know, I was in a meeting with my other job, and I got the news on my phone. I did a double take as well, walked out of the room, made sure I was reading things right, checked my glasses a couple of times. You know, I'm thinking this whole time, and I think a lot of people were under the same impression that, you know, Jacques Vaughn was a front runner, and you know, you're hearing some smoke about Popovich. So when Steve Nash's name came up, it was just, like you said, just I had to do a double take. I think I was as surprised as everybody else.
And Pop's house, you know, further putting more gasoline on the flames here, Pop's house gets put on the market, and you're almost saying to yourself, wait a minute now. Seriously, this could be a thing? Pop to the Nets? And it's going through in my mind, like, imagining Greg Popovich with Kyrie Irving and those two personalities. I figured, like, KD, okay, they could maybe mesh, but it just to think of that and the comfort of him leaving San Antonio, it would have surprised me personally. And, you know, obviously Sean has great respect for him. He played for him. He was on the bench with him. He worked with him in the front office. Did you ever get the sense that that was more of kind of like a pipe dream, or did you think it had some legs to it?
You know, Scott, from as far as I'm concerned, and what I was told is that, you know, Pop was definitely somebody that they had on the table. They wanted a big name back when they fired Kenny Atkinson, and coming into this next season where Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are going to be healthy, as we assume. And, you know, I understand that they wanted to get him, that he was definitely a name that was on their list. But, you know, throughout the process, you know, I was being told it was far-fetched, a lot of obstacles to go and get him. So, you know, again, you see things like him selling his house and all the connections. You know, we talk about 9 staffers on the Brooklyn Nets, in the Brooklyn Nets organization, that come from San Antonio. And it made sense. But again, hearing that it was far-fetched, it just, to me, it never seemed like a realistic option up until the very day that, like you said, you know, he was selling his house one day before the Steve Nash news came out. So, you know, I never really bought into it completely, but if you connected the dots and things like that, it would have been easily, you know, it would be easy to be fooled in that aspect.
Yeah. One thing we know, Sean Marks has always been a guy that doesn't necessarily go with the flow. He kind of goes against the grain a little bit. He loves the Spurs. He's always loved Steve Nash as a person. I understand that. You know, it's interesting too. Jock is a guy that, coming off his head coaching debut with the Orlando Magic, didn't go according to plan. He goes to San Antonio, works for them, rehabilitates his image a little bit in terms of becoming a sought-after guy again, then lands in Brooklyn. And I thought he did a really good job with an undermanned Brooklyn Nets team, leading them to a 7-3 record. And obviously they got swept by the Toronto Raptors in the first round, but I don't think anybody expected anything really more than that from Brooklyn. I thought they showed enough grit and fight. You mentioned about the kind of a big name thing that they wanted to have. It's interesting because I always felt like that was more of a Mikhail Prokhorov mindset. And now with the transition of Joe Tsai as the lead owner here, it comes to me, I don't want to say as a shock, but he seemed in the beginning to be a little bit more hands-off with Sean and allowing him to do his thing. And, you know, when Sean and Kenny and all those guys got the extensions after they made the playoffs, it seemed like he was more hands-off. But in this process, it seemed like we got our first taste of really seeing what Joe Tsai could be as an owner and him putting his stamp on it. And with a guy like Steve Nash, they certainly get a splashy name. I don't know, ultimately, we're going to see if it's the right thing, though. Sometimes when you chase the splashy name, you may get the back page headlines, but what ultimately is going to win those, what's going to garner those headlines is winning games, not the splashy name for one day out of a year.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you know, I think we saw a little bit of it with Kenny Atkinson firing or whatever you want to call it, departure. Joe Tsai did have something, you know, he did have his hands involved in that, but this a little bit more so, you know, he did want that big name, like you mentioned. And, you know, what I, as far as I know, Sean Marks was fully ready to embrace change at the head coaching position. Now, something to keep in mind too, Scotto, is that, you know, when Kenny Atkinson was hired, it wasn't him who brought Jacques Vaughn on the coaching staff. It was Sean Marks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you see what Jacques did in Orlando, he overachieved. And I think, you know, Sean Marks was really, really focused on bringing him back. And, you know, obviously KD signed off on Steve Nash. Obviously Kyrie signed off on Steve Nash. But Sean Marks is also somebody that, you know, again, we attribute a lot of this to Joe Tsai and obviously wanting the big name. But, you know, it is important to mention that Sean Marks really was integral and also fully embracing change and satisfying his superstars, satisfying his new owner in Joe Tsai. So, you know, I think for them, a lot of things come into play with Steve Nash. And a lot of people say, you know, the last time the Nets did this was Jason Kidd back in 2013. But, you know, again, Scott, I gotta emphasize this point. You know, I think it's a little different than the Jason Kidd hiring, because when Kidd got hired with the Nets, it was kind of a one-year window. You know, Paul Pierce and KG and that team, it was really such a short window with no safety net, I guess you would put it. And, you know, no room for Kidd to grow. It was a one-year experimental thing, championship or bust. And they weren't going to get past the Miami Heat. And I think everybody kind of knew that, despite all the hype around them, the Sports Illustrated covers and whatnot. So, you know, I think a lot of people are comparing this hire to that hire, but two totally different contexts here, where Steve Nash is really walking into the most coveted head coaching position in the NBA, where he gets to coach Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and a very deep Brooklyn team, for that matter. And you know, they're back in a championship or bust situation, but I think he has a little bit more time. He has a little bit more time to grow, backing from the front office. And of course, you know, he'll be able to bring on a couple of his own staff members too, as well as some of the assistants from the past regime under Kenny Atkinson and Jacques Vaughn.
It's interesting with Steve, because you touched on a little bit about the comparison to Jason Kidd. Kidd, first of all, KG and Pierce were a lot older. Nash gets Durant and Kyrie earlier in their 30s when they're in more closer to their prime. My initial thought when this happened was, it's either going to go one of three ways. He's either going to be the next Steve Kerr and leads them, you know, whether it's Steve Kerr, you know, as a former player, you could think of Ty Lue, who won with Cleveland when he first became a coach. Nick Nurse did it, even though he wasn't a former player. There's been guys, those three guys since 2015 that have won as first time head coaches. So it's not out of the question. The middle ground I felt was Jason Kidd, where there were some highs, there were some lows. The biggest difference, I think he will get along with management better than Kidd did. We know some of the backstory behind there, where Kidd was angling to get Billy King and those guys out of there and assume more power. But the worst case scenario I thought of was, this could flame out almost like a Derek Fisher with the New York Knicks. I know it's different teams and different circumstances, but to me, that's the worst case scenario where you know, this just doesn't work and they underachieve. And you mentioned about the championship aspirations. That's 100% what the expectation is right now. When you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, there's nothing short of that should be the expectation. I think for a guy like Steve, he's a mellow dude. it'll help him with that. Having Durant's support certainly helps. The biggest thing I would say that's also different from Kenny, and in the start of this whole rebuilding process when Kenny and Sean took over, we saw the culture was talked about a lot. And I think now the culture shifts to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are the culture now, more so than anything. Yes, you've got guys like Joe Harris. You've got guys like Spencer Dinwiddie. You've got Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, some of the younger guys that are be there. But the driving force behind that locker room and the leaders, in my view, is Durant, Irving, DeAndre Jordan's got a voice, Garrett Temple. Those are the guys. So I think that we're seeing that shift in terms of the culture. And it's clearly being more player-driven by stars such as Kyrie and KD than it was in the past.
Yeah, yeah, you make a good point. And that blue-collar, you know, high-character individual type of culture that Kenny Atkinson instilled. Yeah, you know, when you're developing a team and you're trying to get things back on track, those are the things you have to do in order to get a chance at these superstars. So when they do walk in the building, of course, you know, that culture is going to shift straight to a superstar culture. But, you know, I think we have to commend the Nets and Sean Marks even for keeping it a little partial as well. I mean, again, we're still talking about a superstar culture here, but as we mentioned, Jock Vaughn is coming back. You know, a couple of the assistant coaches will be coming back that were under Kenny Atkinson. You have guys like Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, as you mentioned, that have been here since day one. So in a sense, you kind of have, you know, if you're Sean Marks and you're looking at this, you know, you have a couple of guys in a unit that, you know, were part of that day one culture that understand how far it took them and how long it took them to really get to where they are today and what they had to do to stay on that track and be a part of a winning culture. But also now for these guys, their biggest adjustment is, yes, you know, adjusting to a superstar culture and having to listen to what they have to say, because if Kevin Durant speaks, everybody listens. And that's where the Brooklyn Nets are today. You know, we talk about the head coaching search. Ultimately, Sean Marks is not going to sign off on somebody that KD doesn't approve of. So, you know, when you think about Steve Nash and what the net situation that they're in right now, you know, you question his inexperience as a head coach, but you have to trust Marks and what he sees in Steve Nash and the relationships that he has with these superstars. And I think that's the most integral part about all of this.
Yeah, I'm just curious from my perspective when Steve's, you know, drawing up plays, that remains to be seen. But what's going to happen when he's making substitution patterns? Is DeAndre Jordan going to be okay with that? You know, we saw that little bit of tension there with when Kenny was there. A lot of people thought, oh, DeAndre Jordan's going to start. They just paid him. Nah. Kenny was fixated on Jared Allen, who he considered to be the better player. Nash is going to have to navigate that locker room dynamic. And I'm also curious, when push comes to shove and it's crunch time, is Kyrie going to listen fully to Steve Nash, or is he going to maybe freelance a little bit? You know, previously I had spoken to guys in Boston, and he would have that tendency where he would break off plays from Brad Stevens and would kind of do his own thing. And there were some times where it was masterful, and there were other times it left some people in that organization scratching their head, wondering what was he doing. Kyrie is clearly a talented player and one of the best point guards in the league. I'm curious just how that dynamic shifts, because nobody, you know, when Ty Lue was coaching him, Ty Lue wasn't on the level of Kyrie Irving. Now you got Steve Nash, that was a two-time MVP and a Hall of Fame point guard. I think that should make it work, and Steve's personality should make it click. I just still think it's going to be something interesting to watch. All these dynamics that you have to manage when you're in the lead chair, it's a different vibe than coming in and working out with Kevin Durant here and there, and, you know, when he was with the Warriors, and, you know, kind of being the good guy in a sense. Sometimes you got to be the bad guy as a head coach a little bit and rip into guys and finding that balance. That's going to be something I think will be interesting for Steve. You know, and you touched on JV. Keeping Jock, we've seen that pattern from Sean where you're bringing a guy back that is there to guide a first-time head coach like he did with Kenny. And I think the bigger thing is Jock is a selfless kind of guy. He's not it's not going to be a adversarial or tenuous relationship with Steve. I think the two of them will work well, which is critical if you're going to ever bring back someone in that type of capacity, because it's got to sting a little bit to not get the job and have it go to somebody who never had any head coaching experience. And, you know, I found it no coincidence that a guy like Chauncey Billups is now like throwing his hat in the ring for that too. This move did irritate some people, certainly around the league, that, you know, there's other candidates that have been around and have the experience and they didn't go that route. So it's really a push your chips in the center of the table kind of move for me. And one where Sean Marks is really putting his head out there.
Yeah. I mean, you had to expect it. You know, again, with somebody with no experience in their background in terms of head coaching, of course there's going to be backlash and on so many different levels. But I think what this comes down to is just that they felt that Steve Nash was the right basketball mind that can connect to KD and Kyrie. And you know, there is this talk about what happens if Steve Nash doesn't get through to Kyrie or this, that, and the other thing. But you know, I think people need to realize once KD and Kyrie do step on that court and they are winning ball games, you know, attitude shifts. I understand that things, you know, don't always go right or, you know, they may have their disagreements. But I think that Steve Nash, given his background and his relationships with these players from the past, you know, I think that you know, they should, at the very least, they should respect what he has to say. And, you know, again, it's too early to really tell what's going to happen. Because we have never seen Steve Nash coach a game, and we've never, you know, we haven't seen these guys play together yet. But, you know, look, if they're bought into Brooklyn, there should be no problems. You know, they had a huge role in picking who would be the head coach, and here we are. So there should be no problem with Kyrie Irving. Sean Marks certainly sticks out his neck. People are definitely going to be aggravated, you know. But Jacques Vaughn, off of merit, you could say that he absolutely deserved this head coaching job. Again, like you said, nobody expected him to do the job that he did. He overachieved. But at the same time, again, he comes back in a capacity where he's the lead assistant coach. He's going to be the highest paid assistant coach in the NBA. And in the next couple of years, I'm sure that teams are going to consider him to be a head coach. And for him, I think it's a win-win. He gets to kind of finish what he started here. Although it may not be in the head coaching role, he is still going to have a big say and understands the Brooklyn Nets locker room from the past and now. So based off of merit, you know, you look at Jacques, and I think that you, of course, you know, I think you say he deserved this job. But at the same time, you know, they found their match in Steve Nash. And clearly, whatever is going to make the superstars and KD and Kyrie happy, you know, that's what you have to do if you're Sean Marks. And in this case, he did it. So, you know, I'm excited to see what happens with Steve Nash. But I also I want to see, like you said, how he deals with the hardships, how he deals with some confrontation if things aren't going right. You know, that's the biggest question I have for him since he has never coached before. And if this thing doesn't work out, if they don't win a championship under him, you know, the questions, then we could really start to question the hire. Because yes, there were other qualified people for this job. But as of right now, you know, we're sitting here, Scotto, in September, and it seems like it's a good hire. But again, we won't know until we see these guys step on the floor and deal with adversity, deal with the hardships, and deal with the good and the bad. So, you know, it's certainly going to be exciting, but the sexy hire doesn't win you a championship. Being on the same page, communication, and you know, putting it all together wins you the championship.
Yeah, and I think certainly Nash is going to be fine with the media. I have no problem with that. Jock Vaughn will have the ability next year, like we talked about, an opportunity to get more head coaching jobs and be a candidate for that. And by the way, that could also be on the college circuit too. When Hopefully, I would hope by then COVID-19 is more in the rear view for us. You know, that we're dealing with some certainly crazy times right now, but that has stopped people in the college game from hiring guys, and it's put a halt on a lot of different things. And on that front, you know, I think you had tweeted the other day too about there being some possible changes to the assistant coaching staff. When I look at it, Tiago Splitter, Brett Brielmeier, Adam Harrington, I think those guys stay, certainly. Adam's got a great relationship with Kevin Durant. Tiago and Brett have Spurs ties. Just looking at it objectively, you know, you mentioned earlier, too, that Jock Vaughn was brought in by Sean to kind of be a guide for Kenny when he first started. The one guy I remember Kenny bringing on was Jordan Ott from Atlanta. He's done great work with Damari Carroll in the past. He did has continued to do great work with Joe Harris as well. You know, if Kenny gets a job as a head coach somewhere, I could see him maybe trying to bring Jordan Ott with him if he lands in another destination. It's something to look out for in that regard. But I certainly am curious to see who's going to look possibly to come join this staff. Because you already know, Steve's your head guy. JV's the clear number two. Who's going to be looking to come and join Steve that maybe he would bring? I think Mark Stein at the New York Times talked about Steve reaching out to Dirk Nowitzki. That would have been cool, but from a nostalgic standpoint. But I don't know if he would have been a good coach or not. That's going to be an interesting dynamic to see. Do you have any thoughts on what they could do with that staff on the assistants?
Yeah, Scott, I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, in terms of guys that came over from San Antonio and that were marks. You know, those are the guys most likely to stay. But, you know, in terms of Steve's staff, I think a name to look out for is Rajah Bell, somebody that he played with with the Suns in Phoenix. You know, another guy that was also part of the San Antonio Spurs organization, I believe, back in 2008. You know, someone else to look after is Alvin Gentry, who was a part of the coaching staff in Phoenix as well, who was just laid off from his Pelicans job. So I think those are two names that right off the bat that you have to think about: Rajah Bell and Alvin Gentry. The big thing would be Dirk Nowitzki, but it doesn't seem like he's ready to come out of retirement just yet. So, you know, again, like I said, keep an eye out for Rajah Bell. Keep an eye out for Alvin Gentry. I think those are two names that you might see on Brooklyn's coaching staff next season.
Those are some interesting names. I like that. You know, Alvin's a guy who's certainly been around and had experience. He's, I know, certainly dealing with the media. Let me give you a quick Alvin Gentry story. I don't know if you knew this, but when he got let go from New Orleans, he ended up taking out all the beat writers and stuff out for dinner and thanking them. You don't see that a lot. It tells you a little bit about the type of guy that he is as a first-class person. And Rajah Bell, you touched on, a 3-and-D guy. Rajah Bell would be an interesting name. I'd like to see how he would do in the coaching world. I think he's at CBS right now, so that'd be interesting. You know, when I also look at this team, I had touched on this with an article on Hoopsite, but it seems to be really after the bubble, when Caris LeVert took over a little bit as the lead guy, it's a question that's going to be brought up from time to time in the offseason, I think. Is he the third star? Is he the third guy that can complement Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving? Or do they need to make a trade and try to really push all the chips into the center of the table? For me, I think he's been a guy that's proven to be clutch, hit game winners. He signed for the next 3 years, moderately priced. The only cons to it, for me, are the guy needs the ball in his hands, and you can't have him, Kyrie, and KD all have the ball in their hands. So when you look at Caris LeVert, what do you see for him next season?
Scott, I think he's the third star. I mean, you know, my biggest concern with Caris has been inconsistency over the years. But, you know, after really we saw him drop 51 against Boston, you know, right before the season was suspended, You know, we had seen a growth in Karras that we hadn't seen before. I think him taking that next step, that next man up mentality, you know, a lot of guys were hurt between Kyrie Irving and Spencer Dinwiddie was hurt at the time, I believe, or he wasn't playing in that Celtics game. But, you know, after that, it seemed like he went right into the Orlando bubble with very little help. And he looked like he evolved as a player himself, you know, and he averaged 25-5-5. You know, these are not numbers to take lightly. And again, he was doing it pretty much on his own with a bunch of guys that were basically picked up off the street. So I think that when you talk about a third star, I think Karis LeVert can absolutely be that guy. And you, the way I look at it is, you know, he's kind of 3A and Spencer Dinwiddie is a bit of 3B.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a situation where not only do I feel like he could be the third star, but I kind of feel like the Nets are in a situation where they have an embarrassment of riches. When you talk about guys after KD and Kyrie, you have a Karis LeVert as your third option, but you also have Spencer Dinwiddie leading the backup unit, somebody who has proven that he could be a starting point guard in this league, averaged 24-7 when Kyrie was out and he started. So, you know, I think you look at guys like that, and then you have a Joe Harris if they re-sign him. You have a Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan. You know, and you're talking about a team that's 7-8 players deep. So I do focus on the third star aspect of it, but when you think about Karis LeVert and what he's done, I think he has more than proven himself. The idea here is him staying healthy and staying consistent. But behind KD and Kyrie, you know, I think back to that Trailblazers game back in the bubble, and it comes down to the last shot, and it's Karis LeVert. I'm thinking to myself after he misses that, I'm thinking that's going to be Kevin Durant next year. And if it isn't Kevin Durant, it's going to be Kyrie Irving. And if it isn't Kyrie Irving, it's going to be Karis LeVert. And that, to me, again, is an embarrassment of riches. It seems like he could be that guy. KD loves him. We've seen his game grow. And the big question here, Scotto, too, and the last thing I'll lead off on with this question is that, you know, is it worth having to get rid of the entire foundation and a team that, like I mentioned, runs about 7-8 deep? Do you gut that for one guy when you already basically have that and you have that depth? And we know how important depth is come playoff time and just in general throughout an 82 game season, nonetheless. To me, it's not worth trading all those guys because you already have that guy on your roster. Maybe even two in Spencer Dinwiddie coming off the bench, who should be one of the leading candidates for Sixth Man of the Year next year.
You know what's funny? You touched on Spencer. Spencer is a guy that wasn't a borderline all-star when Kyrie was out. I think you have to keep him as insurance for Kyrie, who has shown a propensity to get injured and miss a large amount of regular season games. I forget the numbers, but it's probably like 3 years in his career where he's really played like 70-something games or so. I'd have to double-check that off the top of my head. I think what would be interesting, you keep Karis to make it work. You know, you touched upon Spencer Dinwiddie coming off the bench. I almost wonder if you put Karis off the bench too. And just so that he can be more of the guy that you saw in the Orlando bubble where he and Spencer are carrying that unit. I don't think a lot of people have thought about it. I know a couple of executives, at least one executive in the article I wrote on Karis LeVert said that he could see him as a leading Sixth Man of the Year candidate. If the Nets went that route and Steve Nash went that way, you talked about the embarrassment of riches. I could see Dinwiddie and LeVert competing for that Sixth Man of the Year award, similar to what the Clippers have with Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams. It would be an interesting dynamic on that front. I think either way, to your point, right, you're not going to move Karis unless you can get somebody special like a Brad Beal, but Washington is not looking to move him. They're trying to make the playoffs and make some noise next year and talking with people over there. And they're looking forward to having John Wall back and seeing what they have. Re-signing Davis Bertans, one of the league's top three-point shooters. It's going to be interesting. I think if Karis works in the gym and continues to improve his three-point shot, I think it was around 36% this year, that'll go a long way. Because, you know, you talked about it I think Durant or Kyrie having the ball and then him, if it was coming down to a clutch situation, he's got to be able to knock down a catch and shoot three with those two guys on the floor. That, or, you know, we've seen him showing an ability to slash to the hole and whatnot, but if he's not going to have the ball in his hands to do a high pick and roll with Jared Allen, he's got to be a catch and shoot guy. So if I was him in the offseason, I'd be working on that. And then I think you can make it come together with all three of them.
No, I agree 100%. And we have to assume that teams are going to be doubling Kevin Durant. Teams are going to be doubling Kyrie Irving. So the likes of Caris LeVert, the likes of, if they re-sign Joe Harris, they're going to be wide open. And, you know, for Caris, we saw his ability in the pick and roll, his ability to penetrate. You know, obviously as a ball facilitator, he's grown in that aspect. We saw it in Orlando. But like you mentioned, it's that three ball that he has to be able to knock down. Where in the past, you know, and even going back to the bubble, I feel like a lot of his three-pointers were kind of forced, him just kind of dribbling up off of a screen and pulling up. Where in this situation, again, I think with those two superstars getting doubled, that ball is going to be swinging around the perimeter, just waiting for somebody like Caris LeVert open on the wing or Joe Harris open on the wing or corner. You know, they're going to be in a better position to succeed and hit that three ball at a higher rate because KD and Kyrie are going to take so much of the pressure off. Whereas in the past, it was really just D'Lo, Spencer, and Caris doing most of the work, and all three of those guys needed the ball in their hands, and a lot of it was just them kind of dribbling off a pick and roll and spotting up for three. So, you know, I think he's just going to be in a better position to succeed from that three ball role. And, you know, again, KD and Kyrie have a huge, huge deal to do with that. Obviously, this team is going to have so many more options. So I agree with you 100%. His biggest thing is going to be getting in that gym and working on that spot up three pointer. Because, he's going to have to hit that because he's going to have so many opportunities in that role. And if he comes off the bench, again, that's not the worst thing either. Him and Spencer splitting time and going back and forth. Second units having to pick, you know, okay, if Spencer's going off, use him as a decoy and you revert to Caris LeVert. So Steve Nash could do so many things with this roster. Again, he has so many weapons. So I think that, you know, they'll figure it out just because they have a lot of talent on this basketball team.
And plus, Caris's contract, he's got it for the next 3 years. You don't have this urge to necessarily trade him. He's at a good price. I think for Sean Marks, the bigger thing is, so you've got Dinwiddie, who's guaranteed next year. Then he's got a $12.3 million option the year after that, player option. He's opting out of that unless, you know, barring any injury, he's going to opt out for that and try to get more money and survey the market and be a potential starting point guard somewhere else. I'd be shocked if he didn't. You know, Jared Allen, again, he's on the books next year for cheap, almost $4 million. And then after that, he hits free agency. We've seen in the past, when Sean wasn't going to retain Bojan Bogdanovic, you know, they got Bojan. And for those who don't know, Bojan, you and I know this better. It was always about confidence.
Always about confidence.
And when he would make the shot, booyah. Bojan. Bojan was a character to cover for us in the locker room. Quick side note. I also, bro, do you remember when Mirza Teletovic was in the locker room and he blocked Dwight Howard once and Fred Kerber came by and told him, Mirza, the block on Dwight gives you a lot of confidence, and was like nodding him and he took the recorder and put it in his face, and Mirza Teletovic goes, anytime you block a shot like a guy like Dwight Howard, it gives you an immense confidence. And Fred Kerber gives him the thumbs up. That's the type of stuff that I love about those guys. Anytime like you're dealing with some of the foreign guys, they're the best. But getting back to the original point, when Sean knew he wasn't going to definitely retain Bojan as a restricted free agent, he moved him. So you got to decide if you're Sean, do you keep Spencer and Jared Allen and go all in this year? Because then you got to pay them. You got to have the conversation with Joe Tsai. Are you going to re-sign these guys? You're going to go, how far into the luxury tax are you looking to go? That's going to be a question for me. I think that Sean long term has to look at now. So what, from your perspective, what do you think?
No, I think that obviously they're in all-in mode right now. They're in championship mode. I think Josiah is ready to break the books if need be. And you make a good point with Bojan Bogdanović comparing that to the Spencer Dinwiddie situation. But I think with Sean Marks, what we'll see is him let this team play out a little bit, see how things go by the trade deadline. And if he feels maybe that a guy like Bradley Beal, you know, if things aren't working out in Washington, you know, is a Beal available, or is somebody else, does somebody else become available, and then you take it from there. So I think he's still in a situation where Sean could kind of sit back and evaluate how this team operates for at least the first half of the year and decide what he wants to do come trade deadline, the same way he did with Bojan Bogdanović, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, I think this is, again, not an evaluation period, but more so they're going to go in the direction with these guys. I firmly believe that they'll stick with the guys that they have right now. But if for some reason they're underachieving or something like that and come trade deadline, you know, like I mentioned, if a Beal or somebody does become available, you know, I would not be surprised to hear Spencer Dinwiddie's name being floated around or Jared Allen's name being floated around, because you do have a guy in Nicholas Claxton who they think so highly of, and in a small sample size that he played, you know, he played very well, very tenacious. We know that Kevin Durant loves Claxton. So, you know, you have to wonder how expendable Jared Allen is, despite how well he's played at such a young age. You know, if Claxton makes him any more expendable in the way they believe in him.
Brother, you just hit the nail on the head. When you know, Nick Claxton gets kind of lost in the shuffle, but I'll tell you this. Anytime I've had conversations with either opposing scouts or executives, Nick Claxton is a guy that they all come out to watch and talk to people about and try to get more background and whatnot on, because he's a special kid that if he was in the draft this year, no doubt in my mind was going to be a lottery pick and probably the top 10, given how weak this draft was. And where the Nets got him in the early second round was a steal with a look towards the future. He's a guy that I don't know how much he would fully swing a trade, but he's a piece that teams would call and want for sure. Last year, I remember being, you know, courtside before games, and scouts and executives would want to know, what's Rodion Skrouts like? Is he the real deal? Is he younger Andre Kirilenko? You know, the Nets have these younger guys the teams definitely look at and are curious about. And they've done a great job developing retreats. Guys like Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot, who had first-round talent, you know, wasn't in the right situation, and then came to the Nets and found his way. They did it with Joe Harris, who was a former draft pick from Cleveland. Bounced around and got cut, ultimately was out of the league before the Nets brought him back. Dinwiddie was in the G League. We've seen them rehabilitate guys. When you look also towards next season, I know you touched on Joe on the possibility of them re-signing them. I think they definitely re-sign Joe Harris. I think he doubles the salary to somewhere, I'll say somewhere around $15 million. Give a couple million, maybe more, maybe or a little less. But I think he's definitely... he's at about $7.5 million now. I think he certainly doubles it given the market and the lack of talent out there. I do expect him back. What do you think they do with some of the other guys like Jamal Crawford, Tyler Johnson, a Wilson Chandler who has kind of gotten forgotten about? What do you think they do with some of those guys on the back end of the bench?
I think you definitely see Jamal Crawford come back next year. I'm very confident that he'll be back, and I think also Tyler Johnson as well. After what he did in the Orlando bubble, we know Sean Marks obviously likes him a lot after the contract that he threw at him when he was in Miami. So I think when you look at a guy like Jamal Crawford and you look at a guy like Tyler Johnson, you know, these are the type of players that do flock to championship contending teams in these situations and do take cheaper deals to be with those teams. So You know, I expect guys like that on the roster, and just adding to their depth, adding veteran leadership to this team, you know, really filling out that roster. You know, with the young guys like Rodions Krooks or Jean and Musa, you know, you have to wonder what their future holds with this team because of guys like that. You know, you're going to have these types of guys coming in. Even a name to consider is Michael Beasley, who they did sign for Orlando and who Kevin Durant is longtime friends with since he was a kid. You know, guys like that, their names are going to be thrown into the mix come training camp time. And you have to ask yourself, what is Rodions Krook's role going to be going forward with this team, if any? What is Jan and Moose's role going to be with this team going forward, if any? So, you know, I fully expect a Jamal Crawford to be on the roster next year. I expect a Tyler Johnson to be on the roster next year to add to that guard depth that they have. He is, you know, he can play the one or the two. And again, he has shown that he could put up 15 points a game, and that'll be huge for a team like the Nets going into next season, adding to their depth. But you ask a good question, and I think it's something that will linger, is what happens to these younger guys that they have been developing or had plans to develop over these years, because they're no longer in development mode. They're in win now championship mode. And if those guys aren't getting minutes, or they're, you know, 12th, 13th guy off the bench, they might be better off somewhere else, and the Nets trying to exchange for another piece or draft pick or whatever it might be. You look at Wilson Chandler. You know, he was suspended for 25 games this season. He really didn't prove much. He really didn't do much in the time that he did play. He didn't go down to Orlando, so we didn't see much from him there. But we do know that he's close with KD and Kyrie. So I think, you know, with Chandler, I think it's kind of a coin flip. I personally don't think that he's coming back, but we'll have to see on that front.
I'm with you on that. Also doesn't hurt that he's repped by Roc Nation, which also reps Kyrie, Caris LeVert. Just something for the average fan who may not know, those type of relationships matter.
Roc Nation Nets, right, Scotto?
Roc, CAA's got some strong ties in there as well. Yeah. You know, these are the type of things that for most fans that, you know, root for the teams, that they don't know the intricacies of the relationships inside the league. These type of things matter. They help. Scotto,
we saw when Jason Kidd took over, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. You know, when Kidd was with the team, I think they had about 6-7 players that were repped by Jeff Schwartz. I think you could correct me on that, right? So I think we're seeing something similar here just with Roc Nation now.
Yeah, no, it's all – you know, it's funny. Woj told me this when I was coming out of college, and I was at the time working for Real GM. I think it was like my first or second year covering the league, probably my first. We were sitting down in Madison Square Garden, and I kind of asked him for advice, and he was pretty good. He's like, it's all about relationships. You'll see, the more you talk to people and then develop those relationships, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I got it. You know, it's next year be year 10 covering the league. I learned it a little quicker before then, but after a few years, I understood what he meant. It is all about relationships. And You clearly saw that with Steve Nash getting hired and his ties back to Sean Marks. It's kind of funny how fate and stars align in that regard, being a teammate of Sean. If he wasn't his teammate for 2 years, and this is a guy, you know, no offense to Sean Marks, but he wasn't exactly lighting up the box score for the Phoenix Suns when they were running and gunning with D'Antoni. But the fact that they crossed paths, look at how it affects the future many years later. It's always an interesting tale there. Final thoughts regarding the Nets. When I look ahead towards next season, I look at Philly's kind of on a downward trajectory right now. I'm not a fan of their roster construction with Al Horford, and Tobias Harris is not proven to be a max player at this point. The Celtics, on the other hand, are on the upswing. Toronto could go either way, depending on their summer. They got to keep Fred VanVleet in free agency. The Bucks right now are in panic mode. Is it crazy to think that the Nets come out of the East next year? I mean, I know they're the expectations, but when you look at it and you compare them against other teams, I really think they got a shot.
there should be no reason why they don't come out of these. If, unless something drastic happens in the Eastern Conference, a trade or something that forms some sort of super team, I don't see anybody really being a true threat to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You know, you look at what's happening with the Bucks, as you mentioned. You know, they're falling apart. And even if they weren't, I still don't think that Giannis alone, Middleton, I don't see that team being a threat. And that, look at Miami Heat. They're a good team, but I don't think they're good enough to stop the Nets. The only thing stopping the Nets, in my opinion, is themselves. You know, it's injuries. If they need to stay healthy. You know, they do have two superstars that are coming off of major surgeries. And, you know, these are some things that we do forget when we talk about it because there is anticipation growing around this team. But they have to stay healthy. And of course, and we touched on this earlier in the podcast, Scott, is the chemistry that they build and how they play on the floor together, because they do have four guys, four of their primary guys that kind of need the ball in their hands at all times. So the only thing stopping the Nets, in my opinion, from coming out of the East is themselves. I really do not think they have much competition, you know, other than just as long as they could stay healthy and get their things, they have to get their stuff together on the court. There should be no reason why. I think they're coming out of the East. Mike, I can't see anybody really stopping them right now. Again, unless something crazy happens, someone moves elsewhere. It's hard to really say that anybody matches up well against the Nets in the Eastern Conference. And even the same goes for the West.
Well, brother, I certainly hope that you and I will be at Barclays Center to experience this in person. I hope that we, as a country, can get this COVID-19 stuff all wrapped up and we can get back into the arenas and have fun. I certainly miss seeing you at the arena. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you. If you want to follow Anthony on Twitter, you can follow him at A-Pooch, P-O-O-C-H. And certainly make sure you take a listen into his podcast, the Brooklyn Way podcast. And if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside podcast, like and subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.